Before I went live with that, and I spoke to a couple of my mentors to say, this is what I'm going to do, they said, don't do it. They said, they warned me about speaking honestly and openly and calling out what's happening in the industry because they said it will destroy your career.
Welcome to the Wild Podcast. Inspire people, support each other's growth, and create a meaningful life. That's the mission of this podcast, and I welcome you to the community. Since you are listening to this right now, I suspect that you are a curious soul who loves expanding your own horizon, learning about other people's authentic life choices, and getting inspiration to put into action what you are passionate about. My name is Tina Hebert, and today you are going to come with me on a quick jump to the land of kangaroos. It's been a couple of episodes since our last check-in on my favorite continent, and I'm thrilled to be back. And there is a good reason for it, her name being Tegan Dowler, a diversity and inclusion expert based in Australia. She has founded The Blue Collared Woman and wrote Rules of the Game, a book on how to thrive as a woman in the heavy industries. Tegan is passionate about helping organizations become more inclusive and diverse, and a safe space to be authentic as a woman, as a man, as a human being. Hey, if you identify as a man and think this topic is not relevant for you, pause before actually turning off this episode. Diversity and inclusion is not about fulfilling quotas and watching your language. Want to know what's in it for you? Stay curious and follow along. And now, let's meet Tegan.
So welcome to the podcast, Tegan Dowler. Thank you so much for taking the time. It's Sunday evening for you, Sunday morning for me, other side of the world. Welcome.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you for having me. Yes, I think last time we connected, you were actually on this side of the world. Is that right from my memory?
That's true. Here. Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but it must have been through RMIT, the university, so Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology in Melbourne, where you, I think, gave a workshop or something for a female mentorship program. And that's how I met you, and you sort of stuck in my memory. And I do follow you on Instagram. I do get bits and pieces of your life. And so I wanted to reconnect and invite you to this podcast. So, Tegan, I'm a very lazy interviewer. That's not true. But there's one lazy thing I always do in the beginning of the interview, which is I do not introduce you. You get to introduce yourself. Right. So the question is, who is Tegan Dowler?
It is such a big question. And I was thinking about how to answer this before, Tina. And it really is very contextual, isn't it, when you're trying to describe who is Tegan Dowler. And we tend to list off all these external things about us. So the external things are I'm a mother and a business owner and I've got a partner, and we live in Brisbane, sunny Brisbane in Australia. But then in terms of, I guess, who I am as a person, I am someone who is very, very passionate about justice and fairness and equality and enabling people to be able to be their authentic self and really step into that authenticness and be supported in that, in, you know, broadly across in any facet of their life. But my work is primarily focused about the workplace, enabling people to be authentic in the workplace.
I love that. You are a perfect fit for this podcast. I'm really, really interested in exploring authenticity, what it means to people, and how they make it happen. Like, how do they get to be their true self and show it to the world? So I'm really curious also about your work. But before we get to the blue collared woman, how did you get to this point? Like you said, you've always been this way, right? You've always had this interest in inequality, but how did you get to do that as a profession?
Yeah, so I'll take you way back. I grew up in a very small country town in Australia, and there was about 60 kids in my year at school. So for some people that would be really small. And we knew each other since we were little. We all grew up together basically. And my sense of what you could do in life, there was no limitations. We were all just equal. We all did the same subjects and supported each other. But when I went to uni, these things started to become apparent in my world. So I went and studied a Bachelor of Science, I chose psychology to be my major. And yeah, I kept my options open in my first year, and I did some mathematics in my first year of university. And I distinctly remember walking into the lecture hall, and this was at the University of Melbourne, so beautiful old buildings, there was this one theatre that was incredibly steep, and it almost felt like you were climbing a ladder to get up to sit at the rows of built-in desks. And I remember looking around and seeing very few women in this mathematics class. And the professor was up the front, way down the front, because I was up so high, and it was chalk on a blackboard, and he had just this stains all over his shirt, and it was just, you know, this nutty professor kind of style. And I just didn't connect in with him or his method for teaching, and everyone else around me, well, they weren't really like me. And I remember feeling very out of place in that subject. And I just passed it, which, thank goodness, I've never been more happy to get a P grade in my entire life, because I didn't want to have to repeat that again. And all of a sudden, these things started to become apparent in my college experience, when I was living in the dorms, as well as through university, regarding the stereotypes and the differences between males and females. And as I entered the workplace, that became more apparent as well. So I went and studied Bachelor of Science, major in psychology. Then I went on to do a master's in human resource management. And throughout that time, I also did some vacation work in a mining company. So my family's been in mining and construction for a number of years. My dad had his career, built a business in that space. And so I was very familiar with the culture, and I kind of liked it. You know, it was very direct, rough and ready, to the point, a little bit like me, very blunt at times. And I went into that industry and was very, became very apparent the homogenous culture that was in that workplace, in those industries. And I realized that, well, initially I thought that I was not cut out for the industry, because I was finding it difficult. I was finding the aggression difficult. It was mainly the aggression, to be perfectly honest, the behaviors, the culture, the way people spoke to each other. And also the other things around not being included in certain events, or having the bosses and your peers go to something but not inviting you, or finding it really hard to get yourself into those events.
Yeah, where the deals are being made and decisions are being prepared and things like that.
That's right. And the relationships being made that will support you as your career progresses. And I thought, oh, well, geez, maybe I'm not cut out for this. And then because of my role in HR, I had a number of women coming and talking to me about their experiences, from that experience all the way through to sexual harassment rumors on site. So it became very apparent that was not an isolated thing. And when I reached out with, i.e. not just me, and then when I reached out to other women, not just in my sort of sphere of influence, I realized it was much broader than that. And it was just my little justice radar went off around, this is just not fair. And it's not right, because if we have an industry that's very homogenous, they think in one way, they behave in one way, that's very limiting. It's incredibly limiting to its success. And so it's also a major risk factor as we progress. And so I really had a passion for getting more diversity into our workplaces. And that was essentially the birth of the blue-collared woman, trying to get more female gender diversity into the heavy industries. And when I launched the BCW, it began as a blog.
Okay.
It wasn't a business at that stage. It was literally just talking about the realities of being a woman in the heavy industries from my own perspective and the perspectives of others, and sharing their stories around what had worked for them, what were some of the challenges, what were their tips for overcoming them. And before I went live with that, and I spoke to a couple of my mentors to say, this is what I'm going to do, they said, don't do it. Mm-hmm. They warned me about speaking honestly and openly and calling out what's happening in the industry, because they said it will destroy your career.
Who were your mentors, by the way? Did you actively seek like business mentors, or did they happen to be around you?
Good question. They were close people to me that had grown up with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And who had come into my career. So one was a boss at the time. One was a family member, and they were concerned.
I get it. They protected you.
They wanted to, yes. And I distinctly remember the very moment when I pressed live on the website, and I thought, well, if this is going to destroy my career, so be it. I will find another industry to work in, because I feel so passionately that we have to be honest and speak openly about the realities of what's happening in our workplaces.
Did you have a very broad network at the time? So did you expect that once you pressed live, lots of people would read it and know, you know, that's Tegan. Oh my God, what's she saying?
Golly, I can't remember. This was 2012, so nearly 10 years ago. I'm going to say no, because I don't think social media really was it. There was no influencers or anything like that back then, I don't think, or it wasn't as big a thing as it is now. But I was certainly putting things out on LinkedIn and sending out emails to people that I did know to say, look, I've started this thing, sign up to the newsletter. Since 2012, after going live, it started to get legs, and I'd have women that I'd meet at functions saying, oh my gosh, you're the blue-collared woman, that's you. And And so from that, I then wrote a book. I sort of collated and interviewed 50 women and men from across the heavy industries and wrote a book about their experiences and did a stack of research on the success factors and the recommendations for being successful in your career and applying that to the heavy industries. And it's also grown to incorporate consulting with organizations now. Mm-hmm. So I work with a lot of organizations in the heavy industries, predominantly around improving their diversity and inclusion in their workplaces and coaching and supporting their people within that.
Mm-hmm. So now it's a full-time, or I don't know if full-time, but it's a business. Well, a business is always like twice full-time.
True, yeah. It takes up most of my time now. I also do work, I wear many hats. I also work in another strategic capacity regarding leadership and change management in general, as well as the diversity and inclusion work. So under the umbrella term, it sits in there.
Yeah, I see. So when you started this blog, you didn't expect this to become a business or to become your profession? Or was there like a spark of, yeah, actually, that's what I'm going to do?
Spark is the right word. So it is, I described it, it's what lights my fire. Mm-hmm. I could feel it deeply in my chest that this was my calling for whatever the time frame would be. That I just felt like that is what gave me passion. I still do the other work and I get kicks out of that, but this is the one that challenges me immensely, because we're changing mindsets and behaviors and giving perspectives that really challenge the essence of who people see themselves, view others, and see how that whole entire dynamic works. So it's very challenging for some people.
Yeah.
And challenging then as a facilitator and coach to try and guide people through that experience.
Yeah. No one wants to accept that there is a problem or that you're on the privileged side of the problem, right? So yes. Why? We're nice people around here, right? So we don't do anything. We don't discriminate people against, but it's not about just active acts, like verbal acts or whatever physical acts. It's about what's underlying.
Exactly right. You're right. And that is hard for people to realize. And, you know, I'm working with this executive team at the moment and taking them on a journey. You know, that's very much what, such a cliche word, isn't it, in the consulting space, but we truly are creating a shift for them and space for them to reflect and question and self-analyze their own behavior to, you know, explore that. I'm not a bad person and we don't do anything around here and everything's based on merit, and really helping them to peel the layer back to understand the deeper thinking so that they can create shifts and changes.
Oh, yeah. I really want to talk to you about that a bit more if you want to share more about your work. But to start off, do you perceive Australia or the heavy industries in Australia to be different from, let's say, Europe or the US or whatever? So what are the specific issues within heavy industries in Australia?
I think from when I've been chatting with people, other women around the world and hearing their experiences, we were all experiencing similar things to varying degrees though. But what I would say is Australia has been making, particularly our industries, have been making a really active attempt to change the culture. Mm-hmm. And this is predominantly in the bigger organisations. So your large international companies and then filtered down. The focus for them has been incredibly big and courageous, and they've set some very ambitious targets. Mm-hmm. As you get down into the smaller companies and certainly, you know, the Ma and Pa operations, the smaller contractors, it's still pervasive from what I'm hearing. It still exists, the gender stereotypes and the discrimination at that level. I suppose for us, the greatest challenge at the moment is still getting women into the industry to recognize the value of a career in the industry and then removing the barriers for their progression. And they're the things that we talk around there regarding some of those unconscious biases and those expectations that people have and the judgments as well and assumptions that people make.
Yeah, my mind is screaming stereotype threat. You know, already when you told me about your math class in university, I was like, probably you were a very smart girl around there and smarter than many of the other. Well, it's not necessary to compare, but the thing is that something happens to us, right? When we're in a space where we see, I am not the majority here and people expect me to fail or to be not as good, right? And then something like miraculously, we tend to write exams that are not as good as we are used to, right?
Yes. And it's so interesting you say that because I absolutely felt that I had no support. Mm-hmm. So I'd go to my tutorials and I just felt that they didn't want to help and that I was falling behind and just I was rubbish at it. So, you know, it's hard to extract the reality or the truth of what that was because who knows if the exam had been written differently or if I'd had a different tutor, a different experience with the lecturer. But there is, it did remind me of this really interesting piece of research around math tests and gender. And what they found is when they ask the test taker to include their gender before completing the test, that the women actually perform worse on the test compared to the men. But when they don't ask you to write your gender on the math test before taking the test, the scores for between males and females are the same.
Yeah.
I guess preempting and I forget the proper terminology, but priming the gender, actually not only for external people, but it also triggers the stereotypes in our own head that have been deeply woven over many, many years of our life.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous, really. People, you can tell people about these studies and they're like, oh, that's very interesting. But if you go to a company and tell them, like, you shouldn't make people feel their gender before you, I don't know, have a job interview with them, they go like, what? Like, this won't have an impact? Well, yeah, it will.
Absolutely. And it's funny, you know, we're talking about this today. Someone sent me a text this morning talking about pronouns. Mm-hmm. And the appropriate use of pronouns. And she said she had just heard of a book that had been written using the pronouns per, as in P-E-R, mm-hmm. and person. So nowhere in the book did it have he or she. It just had per.
I love that. Okay.
I just thought, wow, that is, first of all, I would love to read the book because I'm intrigued to see how that would read and then how my own brain would respond, mm-hmm. because our brains desire categories and want to be able to classify things. So mm-hmm. I wonder how, you know, just observing your own brain's experience reading that book fascinates me. But also that is so advanced. You know, we're still at the point where people are like, pronouns, what's a pronoun? Why is that important? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But getting to that phase where gender is irrelevant and not even referred to, I see that as quite advanced, and most people just aren't even at that level of comfort.
And it scares people to death. It scares people to death not to know how to address a person or what pronoun to use. Even if you tell them, look, I don't want any pronoun, they feel like they are doing something wrong, even though we give them the permission to leave away any pronoun. So yeah. Yes. And I don't know if you're aware of the fact, like, I love English for, you know, it's simpler than German. That's my native language. And you can use they and them, and people are used to it, sort of. But in German, such a viable alternative doesn't exist. And it's even worse in Spanish and French, where almost every word is like feminine or masculine.
Yes.
Yeah. So language has, is such a big toolkit in terms of diversifying society. And one question that I also have is, has the conversation around diversity changed in your experience in your industries? For example, in terms of, hey, well, we started off maybe talking about women, including women, but then we sort of thought, well, there are other minorities that need to be included. So what's your experience?
So in our industry, typically the focus areas, a lot of companies will have three focus areas, and typically it will be a gender one, so females, mm-hmm. getting more female participation, and that's just numbers in the door, basically. A lot of them have some measurement on that. Mm-hmm. The other one is for our Indigenous Australians, mm-hmm. so getting the representation equivalent to the community. And then there seems to be one other that floats around depending upon what the organisation wants to focus on. So for some, there is general around cultural inclusion, so just broader diversity around cultures. Some people focus on disability, or some organisations focus on disability. And then also we're starting to see things like age focus, mm-hmm. and neurodiversity. So the difference, you know, different the ways different brains work, including people who have autism might be on the spectrum, or ADHD, mm-hmm. and how we build our workplaces to support individuals with those needs.
Mm. And that's probably the key word. How do we build workplaces? How do we design workplaces that, you know, I don't know how to say that. It's just a different logic. It's not like, how do we make these people fit or choose this industry, but how do we design the environment so that they naturally come and flourish, right?
Yes, because that's one thing that we've seen in the gender space in our industries is we recruit all these women in, come in, join this industry. It's amazing, great pay, great opportunity. But then when you get in the door, the culture doesn't support that and doesn't facilitate you staying. And we call it the leaky pipeline or the leaky bucket, because just as many coming in are leaving. So that has been, I would say that has been one of the major shifts that I've seen, and I've been really pleased to be involved in that, in getting the focus around inclusion. So more broadly, that has been the shift from diversity and inclusion. More organizations prioritize the inclusion piece because of that realization. But I also see that our industry, because traditionally it has been so homogenous, it has a very strong masculine culture traditionally, that changing and challenging that is also beneficial for men.
How is it beneficial?
Well, in our industry, we have very high, overrepresentative to the community, rates of suicide and mental illness. And in Australia, the age demographic, or the cohort of category of people who are more likely to commit suicide, are working age men. And that's the bulk of our workplace. So if we have cultures that are inclusive of people being able to be authentic, be themselves, bring their masculine and their feminine side to work, that is a healthier workplace for people to be comfortable to be who they are. So inclusion creates that space for variety, for diversity, and acceptance of that difference.
I love that you say this, because, you know, when we're talking about bringing more women into those industries, it suggests that the men are fine, right? Like, they are there and they only need to create space so that the women can come in and, as I said, flourish. But that's not as simple, right? That's not the equation, because it doesn't mean that all of those men can be themselves and bring everything that they are to the table. So what do you think? Can you give us maybe an example of what men experience, or in what way they are not authentic in the workplace?
Yes. So many years ago, when diversity and inclusion was just starting to get legs in our industry, I was working, wearing another hat, not a diversity hat at that time, wearing my hat of leadership coaching and change. And I was working with this supervisor, a drill and blast supervisor. And we were driving down into the mine and we were just chatting, and he said, "Oh, Teagues, what do you reckon about this, you know, what the company's doing about diversity and inclusion?" He had no idea my other side of what I did. And I said, "Look, I said, well, I'm a supporter of it." And he goes, "Well, you know, I think it's fine. I have no issue with women. I'm happy if women come into the workplace. You know, they're fine. You know, I treat everyone with merit, and that doesn't bother me." And he goes, "But I just don't know what the big deal is. Why do we have to make a big deal of it? If the women want to come work here, they can work here. Nothing's stopping them." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Okay, well, let's take a different look at it. For me, diversity and inclusion isn't about getting more women into the workplace." I said, "This, my perspective is more around everyone." And I said, "Dave, when you come to work, are you the same bloke?" I say bloke, very Australian. "Are you the same bloke at work as you are when you're at home with your wife and daughter?" Who I knew he had. He was quiet and he said, no, I'm not." And I said, "Well, imagine if you could be. Imagine what that would bring into the workplace if you were the same guy as you are at home in the workplace, not just Dave, the drill and blast supervisor, giving everyone pineapples," which we call, you know, if you do the wrong thing, you get a pineapple. Imagine what that would provide to the team, but also to yourself. And that, for me, is what diversity and inclusion is all about.
Yeah.
So you can come to work and be able to put your hand up if you're struggling, and if you've made a mistake or if you've had a tough day, and not be in fear of the competition, the hierarchy, the aggression that can come with a highly masculine culture.
Yeah. Wow, I love that. That's right. That's right. Because that's also why I personally do not like the word feminism. Not that there's anything wrong about feminism. It's just that it's, the term doesn't reflect what it is about. It's about humanism, but that term is blocked, right? So it's about creating space for everyone to be themselves and to be respected in their abilities. And absolutely. And you know what? I just had another podcast conversation with Germany's first transgender commander for the German armed forces. And she's a very inspiring person. And well, she's just, for me, she's a symbol of authenticity, because she told me that she's been told, well, can't you just be a little less colorful, you know, in your uniform? Yeah. But she's not. Like, she's herself, and she brings a completely different culture to what we perceive to be, you know, the military. And I love that. And yeah, that's right. So
that's amazing.
Can be anyone who can bring just a little bit more of their personality to the workplace.
That's right. And it provides so many benefits in terms of, it's not just the personality that you'll be bringing, but then with that comes all the variety of the ideas and the different perspectives and the different experiences that you then feel safe to share, because you are accepted and you feel like you belong with the people around you.
So what about you, Tegan? Has your journey, also your professional journey, did it give you more authenticity in what you're doing? Because I can't imagine that you can do the work you do without it reflecting back on your life, right?
Yeah, yes. It's interesting you ask that. I think we're in a very interesting moment of pivot and change globally, and I'm certainly feeling that myself professionally. So I am very motivated to, it's a muscle that I'm constantly trying to work on myself, that authenticity and finding work that aligns with my values and my passion. You know, that's the goal, isn't it? That's the dream, to be able to pay the bills with something that lights that fire for you.
Yeah.
And so I certainly do my best to be authentic, but I will be honest, I don't always achieve that. And that is
I get that.
Yeah. And sometimes when I'm not authentic, it's to fit in, you know, and I'm thinking just a few years ago when I was working with an energy company and working on some sites that had very, very few women still, I would adjust myself and I would sit in the car and talk about hunting and shooting and guns, and that stuff's just not up my alley, but I would, you know, have that convo and provide that space for that individual to have that conversation. And so whether that's me being inauthentic or not, now that I reflect on that, I'm not sure if that is being inauthentic. You know, I think that's being flexible, but I'm still authentically me in that space. I'm not going to change my views radically. But throughout my career, I have been focusing and I have had to learn to try and maintain authenticity, because I realized when I wasn't authentic, I would be incredibly unhappy and my health would suffer. I would be highly stressed. Mm-hmm. So there's for me, I'm fortunate in that I get a real physical tap on the shoulder to say, hey, something's misaligned here for you. Mm-hmm. But other people don't get that sort of feedback from themselves to say, you probably need to tune in here and work on some things. So, you know, well, I'm forever trying to make sure I'm being authentic and even just being clear on what my passions are and what lights that fire, because that also continually changes.
Sure. And it's only natural that changes and that you do bring certain aspects of yourself in different situations, because certain situations lure aspects of you out more than others. That's natural. And yeah, that's also an interesting thing. You know, just because you don't say anything you want to say, it doesn't mean that you're being inauthentic. But you say that you're still struggling, or well, not still, but like it's a continuous lesson of life, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you still have fears? Are there fears like when you started the blog? Do you still hold back in certain areas?
I think I'm getting better with that. So I historically had some fear of being disliked or doing things that others didn't approve of. And I would say through this journey and doing the self-reflective piece and really recognizing what your values are and what is important for you to as your guiding principles, that has helped minimize the fear. And a real building a stronger belief and a trust in the universe. I know that sounds quite out there, but having a really strong alignment to seeing life as a journey, and when those road bumps come in the way, things that you might fear, actually looking at them as from a position of curiosity and wonder, you know, this is an interesting experience. Why am I getting this now? What's the lesson in this? What's the message for me here? And just being almost open to those experiences and those fear, and I use quotation marks, fear-inducing moments.
Yeah, I get that. I like that. And I couldn't help but think that's probably what companies you work for should, you know, like that's probably the mindset they should adapt. Like, okay, now we have this diversity topic on the table and we feel like there's no problem here, but maybe there is. Maybe let's find out what it is that brought the topic to my office and I have to deal with it now.
Yeah. And we actually talk about curiosity being a really important piece in the diversity and inclusion experience, really, from, as you said, it coming into the office going, okay, what's this? Why do we have to deal with it as a business? Why now? What does it entail? And, you know, all the way through being changing your culture. But that experience of being curious and open, because there's no one size solution for every company or every team, and there's not a perfect roadmap you can follow. Yes, there's some best practice principles, but the way we implement them may be very different based upon your culture and also your starting point along the maturity curve of diversity and inclusion. Yeah. So curiosity is such a powerful mindset to have, not only as a collective organization, but as leaders.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as the last question, aside from curiosity, what suggestion would you give to leaders around the world how to address that topic? So if leaders find themselves in a position where they can't help but wonder, why doesn't my team, doesn't my organization reflect society, you know, in the large, how do I approach that? What can I do? How can I start this conversation in my company?
Okay, so we're talking about leaders that are pro diversity and inclusion and want to make a change. Is that
maybe not? Is that the leader? But they found the roadblock and they wonder. Okay. They are curious about, like, what can they do about it?
Yeah, good. So I would say the first piece is to talk with others in the organization. Start having the conversation to see if other people are experiencing the same realization as you, because there's a real power, and there's been some lovely research done here in Australia around how D&I ignites in organizations. And a lot of it comes from a passionate individual, a person who starts the coalition, who starts to get more people together and builds a bit of a groundswell. And with that, you then take the groundswell to the decision makers, to people who have power and influence, and you start to provide the case and the experience of people. Now, my recommendation is when you take that case is that you're very aware of what motivates the person that you're selling the story to ultimately. And I like to often think about leaders in terms of a head, heart, or gut leader. So if you're going to someone who is who you need, and this is, you're going to another senior leader to try and get the green light on doing something about D&I. You have to determine whether that senior leader is motivated by the head, i.e. all about the facts and figures, the benefits, the financial improvements, the innovation, the reputational customer factors there, or if they're a heart leader, if they just want to do the D&I because it's the right thing to do and they care about people's experiences and how they feel, or if they're a gut leader, if they're someone who's very ambitious, a little bit driven by ego, they want to be innovative and seen as pushing the norms and being first to do something, tailor your message around what that senior leader sees as important. Because if you get that initial sell and pitch wrong, it can keep those doors shut a little longer. It can make it a bit harder for you.
Yeah. Okay. I get that. I know lots of models, you know, like how to put people in boxes, like the DISC and blah, blah, but I haven't heard about that one. I like that. And I was curious, you know, when you said head, heart and gut, I went like, yeah, I know what head would be. I get what heart would be, but what's the gut leader? I get it. Thank you.
it's a little bit hard to explain the gut, I find, but that's in my mind, that's the best way I can describe it. Yeah. But you know, overlay that if you do, if you are familiar with some other models, and the DISC model, DISC, is one that I love because it's so simple. But if someone knows their Myers-Briggs profile or whatever it is, overlay it. Look at them too, to really understand the person that you're going to be communicating and influencing towards this topic.
Yeah. So to summarize it, it's tailor your message in whatever way, using whatever tool, and build a coalition and then spread the word in the company.
Yes, that's right. And, start small. You don't have to change the world overnight because it is a long process. Companies that have started this process they're going through transformation, and that takes time. And the companies that have rushed ahead have really challenged status quos, which is great, but they've also unintentionally isolated other people at times. So be mindful that your work on inclusion isn't creating unintentional exclusion.
Thank you for the pro tips and thank you for your work. I really appreciate what you're doing. I think it's necessary to do something about lots of industries and not just about gender, but in terms of all aspects that diversity is comprised of. And so I thank you for your work, and I thank you for your time and for being on this episode with me. Thank you so much, Tegan Dowler.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you for having me. It was an absolute pleasure. Enjoy your Sunday.
Thank you.
All right. I am keen on repeating the question which Tegan asked that man in her story. Can you be the same person at work that you are at home? And if not, what aspects do you decide to leave behind as you walk into the office each day? Well, your actual or metaphorical office, that is. And why? Please share your thoughts and experiences with our community. By being vulnerable, we are each other's champions on this journey towards more authenticity. Leave a comment on the blog at www.wild.one or reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. If you like our mission and our content, share us with your friends or any other person who might enjoy it too. Make sure to subscribe or follow Wild Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening today. Until we meet again, live wildly.